to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Andrea and Ron DeFeo, Dr. Robert Peskin, and Dr. Raymond Ellis. Cranes are integral tools for infrastructure construction. They have a long history, and they're prominent on the landscape of every city. They're a source of fascination for the construction observer, a measure of the pace of economic development, and in some cases, a source of risk. Helping us understand the role and functioning of cranes is Greg Teslia, who's president of Crane Safety and Inspections in Coral Springs, Florida. Thanks for talking with us today, Greg.
Well, you're quite welcome. Glad to be here.
Can you educate us first on what are the kind of broad types of cranes that we see used in the construction industry?
Well, for the tower cranes, there's a couple of different types. There's what we call a self-erect tower crane. There's a hammerhead tower crane. There's a flat-top tower crane. And typically in the city, in the tight areas, or where we have restricted airspace, we use what we call a luffing or a luffer tower crane.
So you'll have to explain some of the differences between these, but I'm thinking that from what I know that the luffing crane has a boom that actually moves up and down.
That's correct. It's erected on a bunch of tower sections, and on the very top, what you're looking at, it'll be rotating on a turntable, and it'll actually boom up and down, similar to what a mobile crane does. It'll boom up and down. Where the other tower cranes, it's more of a long extended arm, and it's got a counter deck on it with counterweights that you obviously see from the ground. And there's two different types of tower cranes that you see throughout the city.
And the first one you named was self-erecting, and what would that look like?
A self-erecting crane is just exactly that. It'll put itself up together. Typically, it's a lot smaller crane, and it has a limited capacity, and it can't go up on the high-rise buildings. It's the sort of smaller structures that are being built.
It sounds like the selection is made based on the context, on the circumstances. What do you need to lift, and how much space have you got?
Exactly. It's going to come to what your maximum lift is going to be on the project, the height that it's going to be at, and the reach that you're going to need to do the pick. And we also come across a lot of restricted airspace, and that's where the luffers come in. And also, if you're putting a new building up and you have two buildings on either side of you, you have to use a luffer crane to boom in and out of the corners, because typically you can't have a crane freestanding high enough to reach everything on the project or have obstructions in the way.
Who in the construction process or in the design process specifies this is the kind of crane we need?
That would start right at the very beginning before the project even breaks ground, typically. They would have the salespeople from the equipment owner come out and discuss the needs of the project with the contractor.
And that brings up another point that seems to be important, and that is, it sounds like the contractor doesn't typically own the crane. That is, there's a vendor who owns the crane and puts it on the site and operates it?
Typically, yes. There are concrete form companies that do have their own equipment. There's a little bit of both, actually.
What's the history of tower cranes? Maybe I haven't been paying attention, but it's only been the last 10 or 15 years when I'm starting to see lots and lots of them in cities.
Well, they started really a long, long time ago, but they really became popular after the Second World War in Europe, where everything was unfortunately leveled out, and they didn't have the mobile cranes to do the work or the reach, so they started developing these tower cranes. And tower cranes have been around as long as I've been around, and that's since 1959, is that we haven't seen them to the extent that we see them nowadays. I work across the country, and I see and inspect tower cranes from Boston to California to Florida to up to Chicago, and we're all extremely busy out there. And there's a lot of cranes, like specifically in Chicago, where you're from, they're quite busy out there. I don't know the numbers, but there's a lot of cranes up in the air.
And so you say they're relatively new. They're certainly not brand new, but it seems like the tower crane is the standard for a construction site these days.
Well, that's not quite accurate because there's a lot of construction sites that we don't have tower cranes on. They'll still use mobile cranes for lower buildings where they have the reach. They can use what we call a taxi service for the mobile cranes where they just come in and out as needed. But on the larger jobs, typically, yes, of course, you'll see tower cranes because, in my opinion, they're the safest crane and they also have the best reach and capacity to a point.
It would seem like part of the decision is how long do you need to have this crane on site and working at the job?
Oh, absolutely. And a tower crane is very efficient in producing for the contractors. When you're up in the tower crane, you can usually swing the crane 360 degrees so you have total reach. And then they can put multiple cranes on the job site and they can overlap each other and work together. So it's a lot more efficient than a mobile crane. And also, it's much more safer than a mobile crane because it has a face on it. So he's not always constantly moving like a mobile crane. The mobile crane's only as good as what its outrigger pads are set up on. So that's what I think about that.
What does it take to put a tower crane on site, delivering it and assembling it? What's the process?
All righty. Well, first of all, everything has to be engineered. And depending on the type of base that you're putting in, because there's different types of bases that they put in, you have to go through a permit process in most cities. So they have to approve the engineering. So you have the base foundation that the crane sits on. This is where the stability of the crane starts. They'll determine how high the crane's going to go by engineering. Also from the manufacturers, obviously, all their specifications have to be followed. And also the area in which you're putting the crane up. We can't put a crane swinging over an occupied federal building or a school, or we have to have restrictions on it. So every job site's a little bit different, and that's why every base foundation has to be engineered for that area that it's going to be set up at. So when they bring a crane out to the job site to be erected, obviously they're going to use a mobile crane, what we call the assist crane, to erect the tower crane component. And they'll start off with the base tower section, and then they'll erect what we call the flooring table, the turntable. And depending on the type of crane it is, they'll have a tower top, a counter deck, and then the working jib or boom on it. And then everything's done in a very specific sequence as specified by the manufacturer. And the manufacturer's the one that really determines the sequence of which the crane's going to be erected. It's basically a balancing act once you get to the upper of the crane.
And it's coming to the job site by truck in relatively small components.
Yes. All the components will be brought in by tractor trailer and offloaded, laid out on the ground, and then erected.
And you need that assisting crane to put it together.
Yes, that's correct.
And on a high-rise building, when you've got that tower part way up and the building grows in the construction process, how do you increase the height of the crane?
Well, there's two different ways. There's one what we call an internal climber. It'll climb itself up through the existing building. But the most typical one that you see is a top climber, where they'll add a tie-in to the building. The tie-in comes out from the structure of the building, and there's a steel collar that goes around the tower itself, and it will support the weight of the additional forces put on to the tie-in because you're going to be adding tower sections going higher and higher with the crane. And the crane basically has a climbing unit, and it'll climb itself and add the sections to it, which is a little bit involved, and there's a lot of restrictions for it. And once again, everything comes down to that manufacturer's specification, what the limitations are, how many sections you can put in. But that's all engineered, and we just have to follow what the engineers show.
When that crane grows in height or increases in height by having additional sections put in near the top someplace?
Yes, we actually raise the whole upper of the top, and we'll put a section in just below the turntable. And then we just keep climbing and adding sections as we go.
And at some point, as you just described, you need to stabilize that tower against the building that you're constructing.
Correct. as the building grows higher, you'll reach a point where the crane's not going to clear the building. Then they're going to have to add more tower sections to it. And by doing that, you have to add a tie-in in, and then you'll add in more tower sections and just increase the height of the tower crane. So it's quite normal to see, depending on the height of your building, you may have 4 or 5 tie-ins on a building, which is quite typical in Chicago, sometimes a lot more, depending on the crane and the configuration and the height.
And how do you disassemble it?
Well, it's just actually the reverse process of top climbing. We call that jacking down. We basically balance the crane and we'll pull a section out and the tower crane will fly that section down to the ground. And it's just a reverse process. And they also, once you get to a tie-in, you have to remove the tie-in to where you get to a point that a mobile crane from the ground can reach all the components of the tower crane. And then they'll just unreave the tower crane and disassemble it with the mobile crane.
It would seem at some point during the disassembly process that the boom of the tower crane isn't going to be functional anymore because you can't rotate it around.
That's correct. Once you get it down below the building, you may be able to swing 10 or 15 degrees to land the tower sections down on the ground that you're disassembling, but that's it. It's out of service once you start jacking it down. And like I said previously, once you get it to the point where a mobile crane can reach it, they'll unreave the crane, meaning they'll disconnect all the hoist cable, the trolley cable, and then the mobile crane will take care of the rest.
Your business, Crane Safety and Inspections, that leads me to ask about what are the safety risks and what are the things that you look out for in the work that you're doing?
Basically, we do a couple of different things. We do what we call a component inspection for a tower crane. We'll go out to the equipment owner's facility and we'll inspect the component before they deliver it to the job site. And the reason we do this is we don't want to have any issues once we start to erect the crane. So we'll go through everything on the crane while it's on the ground at the equipment owners, ensuring that everything's 100% on it. We'll look at each individual component, look at the structure of it, and with the electrical components, we'll do a basic inspection of it. And we can also give recommendations to the equipment owner on certain items that they should be repairing or testing, such as the hoist motors, the trolley motors, the electrical wiring. The turntable is a huge issue, what the crane rotates on. It only has a certain tolerance of wear that's permitted, and we always recommend that they do a certain test on that. All the structural bolts, that all has to be tested before we put it up into the air. Because once it's up in the air, we can't have issues with items like that, because then it's costly and time-consuming to do the repairs once it's up in the air.
Do you do the testing, or do you get the owner to do the testing?
It depends what it is. It's a time factor. For the turntable, we can do what we call a tilt test, and we'll just measure the wear. But if it has to go beyond that, then that's up to the equipment owner. And most of the larger equipment owners keep the records of the hours on the equipment. And after so many hours, they typically separate the flooring ring and they'll inspect the bearings in it. And if it needs to be replaced, they'll replace it.
What's been the history of accidents, particularly wind-related events with these tall cranes?
Well, that brings up a whole big issue there. It depends on, first of all, the geographical area in which you're in. We have codes and standards that we're supposed to adhere to for that, such as in Miami, we recently lost 3 tower cranes down there during the hurricane. There's so much involved with it. But basically, if you're in a hurricane zone, you shouldn't be maximum freestanding your crane, meaning you put in the maximum amount of tower sections and maximum jib in it, because it cannot withstand as much wind load against the crane. So when we're in a hurricane season, we might have to lower that crane or not have it erected as high as we would out of hurricane season. The accidents that happened in Miami, the cranes weren't necessarily too high. It was just, these cranes are basically designed to 94 mile an hour. And when you have 115 mile an hour, 130 mile an hour come in, there's no guarantee that crane's going to stay up. And that's basically what happened in Miami. There's a lot more to it, but keep it really simple.
It's hard to get out of the way, though.
Well, yes. The crane's up there. It's weather vaning. It's spinning around. There's no place it can go. So it's a tough question because the buildings are designed to withstand, and we'll talk about Miami, to withstand the hurricane wind loads. And what's reasonable on that for a building is 150 mile an hour wind load. But a tower crane is a temporary structure. And during construction, they're permitted to have a lesser wind load design. And there's codes that apply to that. So that tower crane may be designed to withstand a wind load 115 miles an hour, which is a lot better than the 94. We just don't put it up as high or extend the jib on it as far. Like every crane has a different configuration, right? So it all comes down to the engineering on what they're going to do with that.
In the extreme situation like they had in Miami, you see the storm coming. Is there anything you can do to secure the crane or reduce the likelihood that there'll be an accident?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, it has to be engineered correctly. That's the basic where it starts. The problem is, in some of the engineering, they'll freestand the crane either above the top tie-in or freestanding from the ground higher, but they'll put a note in their engineering stating that any oncoming storm, they may need to dismantle the crane. Now, this is where the problem starts. So we have an oncoming storm. We know it's 5 days out. We got to take some tower cranes down. There's only so many crews out there that are able to do this. So if you have more than three or four cranes that have to come down the Miami area, there's not that many crews available to do that. And then the second part of that problem is the wind. If it's starting to get windy, they can only jack these cranes down, usually only up to about 22 mile an hour. So if you start getting gusts or higher winds into the 30 mile an hour, they're not going to be able to do anything with it because now that puts them at risk even before the storm is there.
You talked about weather vaning. Is that typical a way to manage these cranes in a heavy wind situation to let them swing free?
Yes, it is. Every evening when the operator leaves the crane, they have to let the crane weather vane. That crane has to clear 360 degrees wherever it's been erected to. And that's all part of the engineering. It has to weather vane. There's no question on that. Now, there are very special occasions where the manufacturer will approve tying the crane down on certain luffer cranes. That if there's an oncoming storm, they'll tie that crane down. They'll tether it to the building or a structure. But that's very specific. But typically, all cranes have to weather vane.
For a luffing crane, if I understand correctly, there's a possibility of dropping the boom down so that it's vertical and tying it to the tower. Can that be done?
Well, not necessarily tower. They can lower the boom down. Every evening, it has to be lowered down to a certain boom angle. And that's already specified in the engineering. And that's just for a normal out-of-service condition. Now, for an oncoming storm, that may be a little bit different. They may have to tie it down or tether it. However, a luffing crane has to be tied down if that's what's specified in the engineering. If the engineering doesn't specify that it is not to be tied down, then they can't do that. That has to be all approved by the manufacturer and through engineering. And or engineering.
What's your role between the contractor, the crane owner, and the manufacturer?
I'm the independent third-party inspector that I can be there while they're putting it up or afterwards, and I inspect it to the industry standards and also to what the manufacturer's specifications are to make sure that everything, every nut, bolt, cotter pin, everything on that crane has been erected properly. Or if I come after they top climb the crane, make sure everything's been assembled correctly, the tie-ins are correct, and also inspect the cables. On all the cranes, we always check the hoist cables for wear, individual broken wires, and same thing with the luffing tower crane, especially the boom cable. that holds the boom up in the air, because they do wear, because they're traveling through the shivs all the time. So we have to watch out for that.
So you're spending a lot of time crawling up and down cranes.
Every day.
It sounds like a really interesting job with a lot of travel and a lot of high places.
Yes. For what we do and our clients, yes, we're national across the country. We even do a little bit up in Canada. But there's definitely a need for it. I've seen a tremendous growth in the industry in the way of safety. I opened my doors in this business in 2002. I've been in the industry since 1979, so I'm an old timer. But since 2002, I've seen a huge improvement in our industry in the way of safety. And a lot of it comes down to the education of all personnel involved, from the equipment owners to the end users, the contractors. They're the ones that really want the third-party inspections, because nobody wants an incident to happen. And my job is to make sure everything is 100% on that piece of equipment before it's placed in the service. And that's what we do.
Is there new technology coming down the road in the crane industry?
It's daily. They're always changing. The technology in the cranes is always, there's always new computers coming out, operational aids. They're coming out with new types of cables they're using on the crane. But for myself, for our purpose as an inspector, we always go by what the manufacturer's specifications are and, of course, the industry standards. But for the technology, absolutely. A lot of the newer cranes, it'll tell you every time that crane's been overloaded, and it'll record the date on it, some of them the time. It's just like a black box. So, but not all of them have that, and nor is it required.
More data and information for management and safety assurance.
Yes, absolutely.
Greg, it's been very interesting to talk with you about these tower cranes, which I see everywhere. I'm looking forward to the possibility that maybe you'll be out in our area and I can watch you at work. Thanks so much for spending the time with us.
All right. Well, you have a great day.
Thanks. If you come back to that crane on my campus, I want to know about it.
Okay. All right. Will do.
Thank you very much.
Okay.